Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation on the evolving role of today's Chief Information Officer. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. How has the role of CIO changed over the last decade, and why? What are some of the key challenges facing both private sector and public sector CIOs? How has information technology transformed how organizations operate? And what does the future hold for those leading information technology efforts? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Harvey Capel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership. Harvey, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Michael. It's wonderful to be here today.
Harvey, I want to get a sense. Could you outline the mission of the Center for CIO Leadership? What is it trying to accomplish?
Sure. The center has as its mission to create a global community to advance the CIO profession. And really what we mean by that is to help CIOs to evolve their role, which in many cases is very tactical, very heads down, very operational, largely focused on expense reduction, which is a fine and noble goal, of course. But what we see is a lot of business value, frankly, being left on the table by not being able to leverage IT in more innovative and strategic ways to look at how to use technology to drive top-line revenue, to deliver sustainable business value, to be full peers, business partners, leaders at the enterprise level, driving business well beyond what they most CIOs currently do. So that's really the mission of the Center for CIO Leadership.
So a very timely mission, an important mission. What are the ways you work to achieve that mission? What are some of the things you're doing with the community?
It's a great question. First of all, let me just share with our listeners that the community itself is made up of about 2,700 members. It's a very global community. In fact, the global nature of what we do is a very important aspect. Essentially, we do research, so we're constantly listening to the needs of the CIO community, what their challenges are, what their opportunities may be. We're then helping them to assess where they are in the maturity cycle, if you will, of their own development and their place within the enterprise in order to be able to leverage technology in some of the ways we've talked about. And then, frankly, based on those conversations, based on our understanding of those needs and the gaps, we partner with a series of world-class educators, academic partners, learning partners to deliver education back to the CIOs. I should be clear, education for us is not about necessarily sitting in a classroom. A lot of our education is online. A lot of it is in the form of webinars or online roundtables, as we call them, or in-person salons or conversations just like the one we're having today, where we find that CIOs get an enormous value from simply interacting with their peers and understanding what someone in their shoes has done before them or how someone has solved a certain problem or overcome a certain challenge.
So what are some of the key research areas you're interested in?
One of the first research projects, in fact, we did was to create what we call our competency model. Given the mission that I described earlier, what we felt was absolutely key was to be able to define the archetype for this new role of CIO. We've now come to call that role the business savvy CIO, by the way. The competency model that we developed, and again, this was based on primary research that we did with our academic partners, with our research partners, with industry partners across our community, consists of four key competencies. First and foremost, leadership clearly comes from the name of our center. The next is about all about business strategy and process. The next is about innovation and growth. And then finally, the fourth, and these are not necessarily in priority order, the fourth is about organization and talent management. So we have determined that in order to support this journey from a very operational, very tactical-oriented role to one that is much more concerned with leadership at the enterprise level and driving business value, in effect, being a business leader who understands IT as opposed to an IT manager who's focused on the more technical aspects. These are the skills that CIOs most often talk about as needed in order to progress their career and their involvement in their enterprise along this journey. So when we do research or when we provide education or when we do a webinar or a seminar or a roundtable, whether it be about a pure technology or whether it be about strategic innovation or whether it be about what is the impact of the economic downturn on the role of CIO, those four competencies are our center of gravity, if you will. They really help us to anchor the conversations that we have, the research we do, the education we provide, so that there's consistency and continuity and defines a very clear growth path for CIOs.
What about your journey? Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to be the executive director of the center?
Sure. I actually came from a role as CIO myself, so I can really say I've walked a mile in their shoes. In fact, I was the chief information officer for the what was called the Global Consumer Group at a, shall we say, a major Fortune 50 global money center bank. In that capacity, I managed a $2.8 billion budget. I supported 150 million customers in 54 countries. This was a giant infrastructure, 50 data centers and 35 call centers and 11,000 technology people and 70,000 operations people. So I really got a very, very good feel for not only what the role was, but what the role could be. By that, what I mean is, how do you speak to your C-suite peers? How do you have the right conversation with your CEO or with your CFO or with your CMO to really understand what the business challenges are? To us at the center, by the way, the KPI or the key performance indicator, if you will, or the critical success factor really is when there's a conversation about business strategy, having nothing to do with technology per se, are you invited to the table to participate in that conversation as a true peer, or are you handed the strategy or the plan after the fact for implementation? To us, that's the acid test. I'm pleased to say that I had the experience of sitting at the table, participating in those conversations, helping to drive the business strategy from the point of view of what technology could bring to the party and how technology could enable that strategy, and often make significant contributions because there are many things, as we know, especially within an industry like financial services, where in many cases the product or service is the technology, so they're in many ways integrally linked. So my heritage is, while it's very technical in nature, in 1976, when I wanted to see what a microcomputer was all about, they were only in kit form, and I built one. So I've always had sort of this electronics, mechanical sort of bent in my life and my career, and have a real passion, really, for leveraging technology to help drive value, I think, would be the best.
And the center gives you that platform of insight and experience.
Absolutely.
And so what is, to your mind, what are the characteristics of an effective leader in an increasingly interconnected and networked world?
An effective leader needs to be one who, first and foremost, is a very good listener, who is able to step back, take himself or herself out of the equation, and in a very dispassionate way, listen to his team or his audience or her audience, or really understand what the nature of the environment is, whether it's a problem that needs to be solved or whether it's a new product that's about to be launched, or figure out how to rally a constituency in the case of public sector, but really to understand what the challenge is, so to speak. The next part of it, I think, is being able to then take that challenge or that issue or that problem and think about, is that really the symptom or the problem? Because many times what appears to be the problem is only the symptom. One of my favorite quotes, by the way, which I talk about all the time, is from Henry Ford. Mm-hmm. who was quoted as saying, if I had asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said faster horses, which is a wonderful, I think, just a wonderful example of what I'm talking about. I mean, he really got to the right problem. It wasn't about faster horses. It was about better transportation, right? So I think a really good leader gets underneath the fabric, if you will, of what the external buzz is all about and helps to identify what the real problem, what the real challenge is about. And then from that, formulate a solution and then being able to articulate that solution very clearly, to be able to motivate, to be able to create a team and build the right dynamics amongst the team members and really affect a solution. At the end of the day, that's really what we're here to do.
Now, do you think because we're in an interconnected world, a world that's based in a large part, our lives are touched by the internet as an example, or disruptive innovations like the cell phone, do these things require a new concept of leadership?
I think they do. I think they do because they really represent a much more expansive view of the context, if you will, that we are living in. I think it's very clear that what has happened, and it's really, I think, a combination of factors, actually. If you look at what the internet has done, it has really created the connectivity. If you look at what broadband has done on top of the internet, it has created the pathway, if you will, that enables not just text and a green screen, but the richness of communication, whether it be video, whether it be high definition or Dolby surround sound or whatever. It has really brought a richness to that kind of communication. And then I think when you add to it the whole notion of mobile technologies, whether it be a cell phone or a PDA or a notebook or a netbook or a laptop, I think all of these factors taken together have essentially allowed us to have a view of a market or a constituency that is really global, as opposed to I'm going to do something for my customers in the Northeast or even in our country, whether it be a customer-facing sales or marketing opportunity, whether it be a natural resource supply chain opportunity, whether it be a manufacturing opportunity, or actually many, many very successful examples of sourcing in one part of the world, designing in another part of the world, fabricating in another part of the world, and delivering and distributing and selling in yet another part of the world, all done remotely, electronically, using the technologies that we're talking about. I believe that those enterprises and countries, governments, that recognize those dynamics and really leverage the advantages that those dynamics bring are going to be the ones that ultimately win.
How has the role of Chief Information Officer evolved over the last decade? We will explore this topic and more with Harvey Kappel, Executive Director of the Center for CIO Leadership, when our conversation continues on the special edition of the Business of Government Hour.